Welcome to Insurance Talk. Located in beautiful downtown Lapine, Oregon, with Bancorp Insurance, I'm Cherie Martinen. I have Rex Lesser in the studio, as well as Troy Waddell from Defense Space Management. We have a special guest with Troy with us today, and we're super excited to talk about his business and also what is needed in the community for defensible space and fire prevention. And
defensible space is becoming more and more an issue with insurance because the insurance companies are getting very particular and they're very, very gun shy from for wildfire. So there's a lot to know and there's a lot to do. And Troy is a local expert, so we're thrilled to have him here today.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been great working with Rex and getting the message out. So some of my background is I've been a firefighter for about 25 years, recently retired again. And
I'm trying to do the same thing.
I don't sit well.
I'm failing just like you.
But I was mainly in the Portland metro area where we didn't have a whole lot of wildland urban interface. But a few years ago during the devastating fires, I was dispatched on the Beachy Creek fire outside of Estacada. And I've never seen destruction like that before. That was eye-opening, to say the least. And moving over here, I've been in Lapine since 2015. I commuted for 7 years because, you know, love the Willamette Valley.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with Portland.
Yeah. There's nothing right with it. But I got hired at Sun River Fire about 3 years ago. And I was, even though I've been a structural firefighter for 20, 25 years, I learned a lot about wildland urban interface and working with the BLM crews and the Forest Service crews. And the amount of knowledge that they have is amazing. But the thing that we bring to the table is we look at it from a firefighter standpoint. So like you were saying, that you can talk all day long about insurance, but when we come in and as a firefighter and we're triaging a house, we have 30 seconds to make a decision.
And let's set the stage here. There's a fire in a neighborhood.
There's a fire in a neighborhood.
And it's blowing up, and we've got big columns of smoke, and there's flames, and you're being called to, you're a structure firefighter, and you're being called to the neighborhood to try to preserve life and property. Assuming you got all the lives out of the way, this is when we talk about what you're doing here with the property.
Okay. Yeah. So got a little ahead of myself there.
I was going to say, too, not everyone might know what the urban interface is, and that's kind of like where that tree line hits homes or hits structures.
Right.
It could be a business, it could be a home, it could be a shop, but it's kind of like that special space.
Right. And here in Central Oregon, everybody loves the trees, they love the wood, they love the natural setting. But again, that comes with the inherent risks. So getting back to it, if we have a fire in a neighborhood and it's pushing through the neighborhood, there's the fire is going to catch structures on fire or everything else through one of three ways, either by direct contact, the flames actually touch the house, or convection currents. So as the fire is really blown up, it creates its own weather. So it's going to suck air in and then actually blow it out. So you have the convective heat that'll pre-warm houses and shrubs, trees, things like that. So it'll take the moisture out of it, so it makes it even more flammable.
So we're talking about, here we are in mid-August when everything's dry anyway. We got a fire in a neighborhood that's bringing the ambient temperature to 150 degrees for hundreds, maybe 500 yards around the fire, drying out the wood so that it'll burn faster when it gets there.
Exactly. And so we have direct contact, we have convective heat, and then we have radiant heat, because all that BTUs is pushing it out. And when we talked about drying it out in the wildland urban or the wildfire firefighting, we have what's called 10-hour fuels, 100-hour fuels, and 1,000-hour fuels. So the 10-hour fuels are your twigs, anything from, you know, a half inch up to 2 inches about, rough guesstimate. So normally it would take 10 hours to dry that out. But again, with those three types of heat, it's drying out in a matter of minutes. The 10-hour fuels are anywhere from two inches, 3 inches, up to about 10 inches. And that's all the dead stuff on the ground that's already dry. And then your 1,000-hour fuels are your big ponderosa pines, your big stands. So that's why they get so destructive.
So 1,000 hours, you're saying it would take 1,000 hours to dry them out in a natural setting without without a fire in the neighborhood raising the temperature to
yeah, exactly. So that's just a natural, if it fell over from a windstorm, it would take 1,000 hours, basically. And that's the density of the wood. But that doesn't count all the dry needles, the pitch, the, you know, everything,
everything
like
else. Everything
all the litter on the ground, yes.
Yeah. And the bigger thing also is what we look for in during fire season in the weather is, like when I was at Sun River, during fire season, every morning we had the report, the weather report. Is it going to be humid today? And we look at relative humidity. We look at thunderstorms. And when the RH factor drops, when the RH drops, relative humidity. Yeah, when the humidity drops.
We have to be careful about lapsing into acronyms here.
Yeah, sorry. Military and the fire service. So the relative humidity drops and everything dries out even faster. And that's when we have a bad time. So we have another place. We always said take 10 at 2. So at 2 o'clock, between 2 and 4 is when the relative humidity drops the most. And that's when the wildfires get really, really active. So, and that's where most of the fatalities for wildfires happen. So we're always looking at the weather, topography, terrain, fuels, things like that. And with defensible space, because you have those three mediums of fire transmission, the more work we do now will make a big difference when the fire comes through. Because most fire just crawls along the ground. And then when we talk about ladder fuels, it's the little, the bitter brush, the little stuff that torches up and it catches the low-hanging limbs on fire and it just crawls the ladder up to the crown fires, which is when it gets into the canopy of the trees and it goes on a run and there's nothing you can do about it. But if you can clear that space away from your house and keep that brush away and trim the trees up, keep the needles off the ground, that makes a difference. It really does. People might not think so, but as a firefighter, getting back to the neighborhood protection, the first thing we're going to do is, can we get a fire engine into that driveway? And it has to be backed in, because if they have to leave in a hurry, they just boogie out. So
keeping your driveway clear.
Keeping your driveway clear.
Yeah.
And not only for wildfire, but, you know, for emergencies. You know, have your address marked clearly. There's Lapine Fire has a address sign program, and it
you may have seen them. They're green.
They're green.
And green or reflective.
Yeah.
Reflective. Everybody should have those on their house.
Everybody should have
that. Or it should be at the end of the driveway.
At the end of the driveway.
Yeah, because if your house is...
Yeah.
A ways back.
Yeah.
Can't see my hands, but.
So if it's a ways back, so, you know, responding in the middle of the night, we're trying to get there. We just woke up, you know, and we had less than 90 seconds to get dressed, get on the computer. We have what's called the mobile data center or MDC, and that's where we get all our 911 information. Well, they have the maps as well. And if we're looking for it, and if we can't see it, it's just, literally seconds. So getting back to wildfire, you know, not only do you want your driveway marked, your house marked properly, but can we get a fire engine into your space?
So is it wide enough? Have you cleared the trees from around the around the driveway so that a larger vehicle can fit in?
Exactly.
And that might be overhead as well.
Yes, and because with fire trucks, the overhead lights, they catch on branches like nobody's business, and they're not cheap. But during a wildfire, you have 30 seconds, and that's the first thing that we're going to look at. Can I get into the driveway? If not, they're going to write it off.
Yeah, because there's other houses in the way, and there's only so many resources.
Exactly. So basically, we have about 5 to 10 minutes once we get on scene, and we're going to pull everything away from the house if it's, you know, if there's small trees, things like that. We'll just come in with a chainsaw and we'll just knock whatever we can out and pull it away from the house. Is there a lot of people don't understand that your patio furniture will catch on. So if it's made out of a combustible material, what happens is all those embers from the radiant heat they come in and they'll land on that patio furniture, and that's what'll catch the house on fire.
The deck and everything else.
Yeah. Right. It's something as simple as pulling the needles away from your deck, because those sparks fall into the cracks of the wood, and it'll have all those dry needles, and that's going to start the fire going.
And composite decks burn too?
Composite decks burn too, but not as fast as wood. So I believe in Deschutes County, anything new now has to have composite and not natural wood. So I've heard that somewhere, or it's coming.
I think they're working towards that.
Yeah.
Well, what's happening is if with the new fire rules from the state, you're going to have to build your house with non-combustible exterior.
Right.
So you're going to have to go to like a concrete board or some other kind of siding, and then you can't have wood roofs. You've got to have comp.
Right.
I think wood roofs went out a while ago, but...
You would think.
Yeah.
Let's put a pile of kindling on my roof.
Well, you know what, though? It's funny. Even though you have that, that's another thing that we look at when we come in and do an assessment of the property is how many pine needles are in your gutters.
In your gutters.
Right.
Yeah.
And the gutters will... I just did a property not too long ago, a couple of days ago, and it was probably 4 inches thick of the pine needles. Take a look at your house and look at all the valleys and the hips and ridges on your roof. That's where a lot of pine needles get in too. Weird noise.
Yeah, sorry guys. Keep going.
Yeah. So yeah, what we do is, and I've just kind of parlayed that experience at the fire service and created defensible space, because what we realize is there's no one really out there that's doing it. And the more people I've talked to in the fire service, they're like, oh, my gosh, this is a godsend. Because most people are like the landscapers or arborists that are doing the defensible space, but they've never really been trained to look at it through a firefighter's eyes. So last year I went through a class for the Oregon State Fire Marshal's Office called ACIP, and it stands for Assessing Structural Ignition Potential. And it was a 3-day class that was very eye-opening, looking at it from devastating wildfires, case studies, to having a whole neighborhood burned down and one house standing. And it all came down to defensible space. Some of the most devastating fires, that when they run, when you have a fire go on a run like that, you just get out of the way. But the little work that you do now, the expense you put in now is going to save you in the long run from rebuilding that house, as you all know, with the insurance agency.
Yeah.
And Greg, go ahead, Rex.
So right now, what you're doing with your business is you're offering a service to come out and actually perform an inspection and give recommendations. Is that what you're doing?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. Name the business, will you please?
Again? It's Defensible Space Management.
Yeah, so it's Defensible Space Management, and basically we're everything that I took from that class, from the Assessing Structural Ignition Potential class, we've just put it into the business. We're not hiding any information on that. If people want to have a self-check, we have that on our website, so it'll just show you exactly what we're going to be looking for.
Which you can find at Defensible Space Oregon.
Yeah, the other one was taken. So there's California, there's Washington. So we're defensiblespaceoregon.com.
Yep.
And you can, with that, you can look at our checklist, and it's a self-assessment if you want to use that.
And you guys, it goes over roofs and gutters, your chimney, vents, siding, windows, decks, outdoor furniture and accessories, and carports. And we can go into more detail on that as you tell us more about what you do.
Okay. Yeah. So as an example, we have FireWise communities. So here in the in Central Oregon, we have a lot of FireWise communities, and basically they've done this. They've created the defensible space. And what people don't realize is there's a ton of grant money out there to help create that defensible space. Walker Range down here in Crescent, they have a fantastic FireWise coordinator. And I recently did a job for a lady, and I think she got $1,700 reimbursement from that grant. So the FireWise coordinators are all through, like you have one in Bend. I think her name is Melissa Steele in Bend. And we're developing one here in Lapine with Lapine Fire with our new administration and our new district board. So we're being more proactive with that. I'm currently working with an HOA in Bend, which is trying to get their FireWise certification. So they had the FireWise coordinator from Bend Fire Department come out, make the assessment, and then I am doing all the mitigation work and the risk reduction. So having that FireWise community is really big for homeowners associations, as well as getting eligible for grant funding, because there's millions of dollars out there, but a lot of people don't know how to access that.
So it's important that your own property, your own home, is set up and that you've done the right things and removed the brush and so on, and that's one of the services you offer. It's important, though, that everybody in the neighborhood get on the same page, because if you're the only one in the neighborhood and that's doing this, you're basically...
Hopefully it's a fire island.
Yeah. Hopefully you're the only house that's standing, but that's who wants to live in the middle of a subdivision being the only house that's standing. And so I think we should urge people to contact the various associations and resources that are available to help maybe begin doing FireWise communities in their neighborhoods.
Yeah, absolutely. As an example, my old I lived off of Day Road on Hakala, and I had a block home. Basically, it was one of the most energy efficient, and it's a Sunterra block home. Concrete exterior, it was amazing. And I thought, my house isn't going to burn. But it was a 2-acre lot, and right next to it, it was just packed with brush on either side. So I cleared my lot out, and then... met my neighbors or the homeowners and basically asked, hey, do you mind if I clear out a little space here? And they were all about it. They, you know, it was bare lots, but, you know, they're all saying the same thing. And then I had my other neighbor, Tom, that, you know, went over and did an assessment on his. He'd moved from California and from Mammoth. So he's, you know, he was very familiar with that. So he was draconian about his. So, and then I had another neighbor across the street and it's just, you know, it's like dominoes. Once you get going and people see the difference, it makes, you know, that's how it starts. You know, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time, right?
And I would say that this project is like eating an elephant, because it's each individual homeowner we're talking about here. We're not talking about the Forest Service doing the Forest Service bit or the Lapine Fire doing the Lapine Fire bit. We're talking about individual homeowners making the difference on their own property.
Absolutely. And it in here, you know, we have a lot of rugged individualists. You know, there's a kind of a certain type that likes Lapine, like, you know, leave me alone. This is my property. I'm going to do what I want. And then you have the little bit more progressive. So instead of, you know, it's the carrot or the stick. And how do we incentivize people to do that? And a lot of it is, you know, with the insurance and some of the tighter guidelines that you folks have to go under, you know, and it's not you at the local level either, is it?
No.
Yeah.
No,
so,
it's not us.
Yeah.
We're the messenger.
Yes. Exactly. But you're gonna catch the brunt of the bad message, you know, in response.
So yeah. It happens. So your services you do, typically what would you, if you came to my home and you did an assessment, what kind of things would you do besides? Would you clear brush? Would you cut down trees, you know?
Yeah, and that's first thing we're going to do is do the assessment. And like with the checklist, we're going to start from the rooftop down, and we're going to work our way down. So little things we can do, clean the gutters. Are trees hanging over the roof line? You don't want any trees up against the house. So I know Melissa Steele at Bend, they're trying a program called The First 5 Feet, and they're basically trying to take that bite out of the elephant and convincing people to take 5 feet away from the house. Everybody wants to put bark dust down or bark mulch down, and that's horrible. So because one cigarette can smolder in that, catch a root, and just take 4 to 5 days and eventually either hit the side of the house, catch a brush on fire or an arborvitae, and that's how the fire starts. So they're trying to tell people to pull away any combustible material away from the house. There's all kinds of decorative rocks that make a difference. Even if 5 feet's untenable, 1 to 2 feet will make a huge difference, just getting those combustibles away from the house. From there, we're going to look at the trees. Are they overhanging? Are they dead? Do they have a risk of falling? We'll take the trees out. We'll grind the stumps if you want. And then basically ladder fuels is anything from the ground up to about 4 feet. We trim out, get it away from there. So the general rule is 5 feet, 30 feet, and 100 feet. So the first 5 feet, you want no combustibles around the house. You want clear out your gutters, things like that. The next 30 feet, you want to take the ladder fuels out and trim trees and take all the small shrubs out up to 6 to 7 feet up on a tree. And then at 100 feet out, you're just kind of clearing those things out.
So like if you're riding lawnmower and the tree hits you in the face, you need to trim that tree.
You need to trim the tree, yeah.
Trim that tree.
You should be able to mow your lawn without getting your hat knocked off.
Yeah, exactly. And people don't realize how flammable and volatile the bitter brush is. It is. I was doing a job out in Powell Butte, and nice place. They had a good separation, and he saw me taking the bitter brush out, and he goes, well, what does that make a difference? And he had a little burn pile going. I go, hang on. Cut one that was still green, threw it on the burn pile, and it probably threw 10 to 15 foot flame length that fast. And that was one bush. So as an example, I was telling Cherie that I've been working in this HOA, and I have a 7 foot by 14 foot dump trailer. And in a span of probably 70 feet by 15 to 20 feet wide, I filled that dump trailer up 3 times with nothing but bitter brush. And that was it. So I hate bitter brush.
So if you have bitter brush next to your home, it takes Troy's advice, and for the love of God, remove it.
Remove it. It is volatile.
You can literally pull it out of a snowbank and light it.
Get rid of it.
And those are the ladder fuels that cause the devastating wildfires, because that's going to crawl up to the dead and dying diseased trees, or get up into that canopy when it goes on a run, what we call a crown fire, because it's in the crown of the trees, and there's nothing but air, fuel, and spark, so nobody's going to stop that.
And you guys, I don't think Troy's trying to cut down every single tree on your property. That's not his goal.
No. Well, and that's part of the problem with arborists, because, you know, they're like, take it out. And I'm like, hang on. You know, there are some dead trees. But I realize that, again, with this HOA that I'm working with, they're pretty affluent. And they don't want road noise, or they don't want anybody to see it. So we're working, you know, diligently to keep the aesthetic up. And we're able to make some educated decisions. So we have some common areas that are all sprinklered. So yeah, we came up a little bit, about 3 feet, because everything underneath is sprinkled. We had 3 big ponderosa pines that the pine needles and what we call the duff, just the decomposition, was over 12 inches thick. And I found 3 sprinkler heads that they didn't know they were there. But that's the stuff that's going to cause that. And if you make the investment early, and it's like anything, you just maintain it, and it's not going to be as bad. Sometimes it seems overwhelming, but it's not as bad as it always looks.
So start with the 5 feet, remove everything directly around your home. Then go to the 10 feet, remove the ladder fuels, and then the next 100 feet,
if you have that space.
Yeah,
if you have that kind of space in the next 100 feet, you know, trim the trees up, get them up in the air. So I've got 2 ponderosas at my place now, and I've trimmed them up probably 25 feet. So just keeping that separation. And then I have grass all the way around the house, no combustibles around it. And I've got 5 acres, but I've got 2 wells. And luckily, the gentleman I bought the house from bought or installed 1 well just for irrigating the front property. Well, I'm using that well in case we have a fire, and the fire department knows, hey, we can hook into this. So they're going to have a defendable space. So things like that. Another good thing to do is mark your if you have a frost free. So in the summertime, if a fire engine backs up, they only have about 500 gallons of water. So they're going to be very judicious with that. But I've seen driver engineers will find a garden hose, and everybody's got an adapter on their fire engine, and they'll slowly fill up with that. That makes a big difference, right? Another thing is that 5 to 50 feet, kind of jumping a little bit, when the fire engine's back there, they have to be able to get around the house 360 degrees. So one firefighter will take a hose on one side, the other firefighter takes another one. It's sort of like a pincher. And if they can't get to where they need to be, if it's cluttered, if it's there's, you know, you're dodging cars and trucks and tires, you know, they're gonna not, it's not worth it. And if they have to leave in a hurry, they're just gonna, you know, gather up their hose, hang it off the back, and boogie out. So they might have 5 minutes at your house, but that makes a huge difference. Or they're gonna stay in anchor saying, hey, we can save this.
Well, there's a couple other things that I understand you can do, or at least be prepared in the event that a fire is coming your way. One, I understand if you have that silverized tape, that you can get that and put that on the vents under your eaves.
Or even better, just replace your vents.
Yes. So by code, I think the vents are quarter-inch mesh. Mm-hmm. And with State Fire Marshal and NFPA, or National Fire Protection Association, they're recommending eighth-inch vents. Because when I took the class, they had specialized video, and they were literally burning houses, and you could see the embers going into the vents.
And this is going into the vents normally in the top of your home, where then it will land onto insulation and then catch the insulation on fire.
Exactly, and that's how the roofs catch on fire, as well as the attic catch on fire, because you can have sustained 70 to 80 mile an hour winds at the front of a fire, and those embers and those sparks will travel. They've been known to travel up to a mile or 2 miles, and they have spot fires ahead of the main fire. So the more that you reduce that risk and take those small steps, and
what other things can we do besides changing our vents?
You can not only change your vents, again, be diligent about the needles on the roof. Look at, again, non-combustible patio furniture. Having that 5 feet, clear all of that out. Clear out the 30 feet if you have that much space. Any clutter. One of the things, like, people will stack their firewood right next to the house. So you want to keep your firewood pile away from the house. Sun River Owners Association, they're very draconian about their ladder fuels reduction, and homeowners having to have their firewood away from the house, which makes a big difference. Don't have, you know, like your propane tanks, things like that. Make sure that those are not next to the house as well.
Okay. Anything else?
No, just if anybody has any questions, you can have our website at defensiblespaceoregon.com. Again,
your phone number?
It's my phone number is 971-226-6772. And my partner, Susan, her phone number is 541-743-5566.
That was a test. He passed.
I got lucky. Like we always say, she's the brains behind the outfit. I'm just the strong back, weak mind.
So you guys, if you are interested in having a Troy or Susan, or it's more Troy, but Susan will book the appointment. Yeah. If you want to call Susan and book the appointment for Defensible Space Management to come to your home, go ahead and go to their website, defensiblespaceoregon.com. Or again, give Troy a call at 971-226-6772.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for coming. You.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Produced by Carver Sound Productions. For more information on podcast production services, visit carversoundproductions.com.